Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lickin' on Lending. This is Monday, the 9th of August. Can you believe it? We are already in the month of August. It's hard to believe. It is vacation time for many. In fact, myself and Alice Alvey, one of our regular guests, is both of us are out of the office traveling on vacation, and it's a privilege. I'm actually talking to you live through the marvel of technology, doing a broadcast from White Pass Ski Resort. I know it's not snow, so don't worry. We're not confused what season is. But the White Pass Ski Resort in Washington State, up here just between Mount Rainier and Mount St. Helens and Mount Adams, we're right here in that area. It's just beautiful up here. I wish everyone who's listening to the program today could be here and look at the view I have. I'm looking out over a mountain lake, and it's just gorgeous. We're going to be using that as a metaphor as we talk about some of the things we're going to be talking about today. We're continuing our discussion as to business strategies as a result of financial regulations, FinReg, that have washed across the landscape. But before we get into that discussion later on, just with amongst our normal guests, we're going to go right into what's going on with interest rates. Joe Farr, thank you so much for bringing it to us each week. What's going on? Welcome back.
Hey, Dave, thanks. I wish I were there with you. It sounds wonderful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, mortgage rates are beautiful, too. That's a good segue, huh?
Yeah, that is a good segue.
You know, today we're about where we ended last week, so not a big change today. It's been a little choppy this morning so far. No real direction given the investors pretty much waiting until they determine what the Fed's going to say at their meeting minute announcement tomorrow. So I'll get into that in just a minute. But last week was another record low week. I mean, it was really phenomenal. It seems like it's been like that five out of the last six weeks, and the environment is just ripe for low mortgage rates. Last week, I guess obviously the big news last week, as with every week, was a jobs report, or every month, first Friday of each month is the jobs report. And that came out last Friday, and it reflected a weaker than expected jobs number. Jobs lost were a little more than what was expected, but even the more critical thing was that the number of non-government or the number of private sector jobs created fell short of expectations. Everyone knew that census workers were going to be removed from the payrolls and that was going to have a negative impact on the jobs report, but they were looking for 100,000 plus private sector jobs to be announced, and the report reflected something a good bit short of that at 70,000 jobs. So the market from mortgage rates always tend to trend higher. Mortgage rates lower, MBS prices higher when economic announcements come out weak, and that was considered weak. And so we saw a nice improvement in mortgage rates last week. Dave, I've always talked about the volatility, and we did move lower. Lower rates moved lower last week, but it's the first week I can remember this year where there were. I'm sure some midday price changes occurred, but one of the major investors we track pretty closely had no midday price changes, so it was kind of surprising.
Wow.
Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up this week, because it can be a pretty dramatic week this week. There are a number of things that are going to come out tomorrow at 2:15. The Fed's going to release a statement from its meeting tomorrow. This is the first time in several meetings where there is the amount of disagreement as to what's going to happen tomorrow. It seems like in the past few meetings, everyone's had a pretty good sense. They're just going to hold rates the same, which they're going to do tomorrow. But the statement might be just slightly revised, and in some cases, slightly revised to the tune of believing the economy was getting better, or maybe and really not much about it getting worse. But this meeting, it's anticipated. There is a great deal of disagreement as to whether or not they are going to institute policies and or make statements that would indicate that they are likely to become more accommodative in their policy. Further stimulus. Yeah, I mean, it's the economic news, I guess, has been weaker than they would have liked, and the recovery slower than they would have liked. And so now there's about a 50-50 split between whether or not they might actually announce something that is more accommodative. And the one thing that's gotten some discussion lately, Dave, is they own that 1.25 trillion mortgages and mortgage-backed securities, and those are running off at the tune of about $200 billion a year. And so the question is, right now, should they begin to spend that money to buy new assets? Should they begin to spend that money to buy new MBS or maybe new Treasury?
Yeah, redeploy for the MBS and keep the liquidity going here.
Well, and if they do that, I mean, it certainly won't be the same as when they announced the program to begin with, but it would add more demand, which would further support low mortgage rates. So tomorrow at 2:15 ought to be an interesting time. Next week at Friday this week at 8:30, we're going to hear both the CPI number for the month of July, as well as retail sales number. So that, too, could be a tremendously important day for investors to determine the growth anticipation for the economy, as well as whether or not there's any inflationary pressure. And I think that everyone expects there to not be inflationary pressure, but pay attention. The last thing I'll point out. Go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead.
The last thing I'll point out is that there are Treasury auctions this week, the 3 today, tomorrow, the 10 on Wednesday, and the 30-year on Thursday, and there's a total of $74 billion to be auctioned. Last time these same 3 securities were auctioned, there was a good one, a bad one, and an ugly one, and well, have to see what happens this time, but anytime you're trying to issue a competing type security, especially as the 10-year is, how well it is received can weigh on how investors feel about MBS. So 1 o'clock each of those Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the auction results will be announced. It may be a good time to pay attention to the mortgage market. So with that, I believe that's it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for bringing us the rate update and what we can anticipate going ahead. It's valuable information each and every week. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. And each and every week, we bring you an update on what's traveling down the legislative highway. And we've got Alice parked up there on vacation calling in. We appreciate that so much, Alice, up in northern Michigan. I hope you're enjoying the beauty up there as well. Give us an update. We may be on vacation, Alice, but it doesn't look like the legislators are.
Well, you're right. We're hoping the president's pen is working and that he can sign a few things, but Congress, the House, and the Senate are on recess now until September 10th, I believe it is. So this is their summer district work period, as they formally say. Yes, I am calling from beautiful Lake Charlevoix, Michigan. But I do want to let everyone know we do have some big developments here with FHA in particular. So I'm going to summarize those pieces for you. FHA's annual MIP increase is ready for the president's signature. This was put into other bills we've been tracking for you over the last several months. It was House Bill 5072 at one point. Now what we actually have is H.R. 5981. This was created by the House and the Senate. It's only 2 pages to increase the annual MIP up to 1.55%. So what it now, and then Commissioner Stevens this morning, many of you probably got an email blast from FHA. If you're part of their newsletter, I recommend that. He did send out the announcement, Commissioner Stevens, that he's hoping to have the revised MIP structure put in place by September 7th. Now, I know that opens up a lot of questions, especially those of you who are, okay, is that based on case numbers effective that date? What about my loans in process? Because we've had challenges with annual MIP before, and it actually went to, in one case, we had MIP changes based on whether the loan was insured or not. So we're all watching, hoping that it is going to actually be based on case number, but we won't know yet. We have to obviously get it signed by the president, and FHA will be able to go ahead and state some very specific procedures. Commissioner Stevens did say also that his intention is to bring it down, the upfront MIP down to 1%, and then we'll have an increased annual premium. So we're watching that. That should be in the works shortly. Now, while we're on the subject of FHA, I'm going to jump to the proposed rule that we've talked about on other shows. It's FHA's Risk Management Initiative. This is a proposed rule that is going to attempt to reduce the amount that the seller can contribute. I can't stress enough. Go to www.regulations, and again, that's regulations.gov, and make sure that you submit your comments regarding this proposed rule. It has several provisions. It wants to reduce the seller contribution down to 3%, but the wording in this ruling changes the definition of third-party contribution. You know, Dave, Fannie, Freddie, everybody has always said a third party is the seller or realtor, can't contribute more than X percent to the transaction. In the fine print of this rule, it changes the definition of third party to include the lender and the broker. That's a huge hit to what we can contribute. You know, and all through the proposed rule, they make note, FHA makes note that, hey, you know, getting it down to 3% from the seller is aligning ourselves with Fannie and Freddie. Okay, great, but don't change the definition. I mean, don't loop in lender contributions into this limitation as well, because Fannie and Freddie don't limit lender contributions, and you'll really be cutting people out of the homeownership equation. So I can't stress enough. Yeah, go ahead. Who was that, Joe?
This is Joe. Yeah, I was curious. When they talk about lender contributions, would that include the premium associated with, you know, using no-cost refis, using a premium rate? Is that a lender contribution?
It's not described. So, you know, you would have to say traditionally that's what we've always thought of as a lender contribution. Like if you go by the HUD 1, right, we would have closing costs identified as being paid by the lender. But that's what HUD uses to check for cost limitations. They're going to look at the HUD 1 and see who's paying what. And so if costs are shown as lender paid, does that mean that's going to get included in this 3% maximum? FHA was really good throughout the last several months of always being upfront with what their proposals are, and they never mentioned this aspect. So I'm hoping that it was just poor typing. Wait a minute, you didn't really mean that, did you? Go ahead and take those few words out of there. But we need to call it to their attention that that's too large of a change. As a matter of fact, many of us in the industry would much rather see 4% on a seller contribution. Dave, I'm sorry, did you have something on that as well?
No, I think it underscores the importance of everyone being active and getting in and getting a phone call in or go to the website is actually the best way. It's not a phone call. It's go to the website and actually type in your comments.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's regulations.gov to go in and look up the notice. It's the FHA Risk Management Initiative. make your comments and your thoughts about the seller concession. FHA really needs to hear what is a reasonable number to cover all the closing costs. We don't need it to be excessive. I think as an industry we have to accept 6% is a lot of room, but what is that percentage that works for your market? And FHA is interested in anyone who has those statistics. So it would reduce the seller contribution. It would set minimum credit scores of 580 for any LTV over 90, and it would set a score floor of 500. So those two score floors that FHA is setting don't really upset a lot. You know, the investors have scores much higher than that right now. It would set manual underwriting standards that would require firm ratios of 3143 if you're in manual underwriting for a credit score up to 619. And if you had a credit score of 620 or higher, then you could go up to scores of 3545. And you would need a one-month PITI in reserves. Now, a provision, Joe, that you were asking about was this other refi alternative that FHA also has in this proposed rule. And in the proposed rule, it basically is it's a temporary allowance that they're proposing. So they don't give a lot of details, just a couple paragraphs. It says they would temporarily permit higher LTVs with borrowers in the score range. So if you're between 500 and 579, that you would allow a lender to give you a new refinance, but the lender would have to do a principal reduction. So this is for your house is not appraising. FHA would allow the higher LTV, you know, above the 90 for that low score range, only if the lender was willing to do a principal write down. And you know, but there's a lot of other loss mitigation efforts that can be used by lenders as opposed to accepting a, you know, principal write down of permanent impairment. So we're not quite sure how popular that program is going to be.
It's also that program is geared toward non-FHA loans.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
The question is, who would use it?
Right, and that's the question. Yeah. So they're looking for comments on that, on whether or not you believe that that's a market that you would be interested, your would serve your customers at all in that credit score range, just purely due to the limited number of investors out there that will even take those credit scores. So check out the comments. There's about 350 comments posted already with lots of ranges of opinions, and so make sure you get yours in there. Now, we usually also like to make sure we give you an update on the Mortgage Reform Act. And we were going to talk a little bit about appraiser independence. The one piece being the HVCC has not formally sunset yet. We do have people asking about that. We should be within 90 days. Once the Federal Reserve Board prescribes the interim final regulations, that's supposed to be out, and then HVCC will sunset within 90 days after that. So we'll be watching for the new set of regulations that come with it. We can talk about that more in detail after break. The RD funding is, you know, we're waiting for the president's signature on that. That's why I joked around about, I hope the president's still around signing things. we're still waiting for that. Those bills are passed the House and the Senate. I haven't heard as of today, but it's possible that may have happened over the weekend or hopefully will happen this week that we get the president's signature on that. And last but not least, we're watching that final rule also for licensing for the financial institutions. So get your 2 cents in on that one as well. That's not as critical. I think people were expecting that the banks would have to be part of the SAFE Act. For those of you with questions about the SAFE Act, go ahead and check the Federal Register for the proposed rule related to the banks and loan officer licensing. Dave, I will take it back to you. There's so much going on. I feel like, go ahead.
back from Lake. What lake are you on, Alice?
Well, I'm up on Lake Charlevoix, which is in the northwest corner of the lower peninsula of Michigan.
Well, we'll have to compare temperatures. Joe is sweltering down there in Texas. I'm sitting up here at a mountain pass, and it's all of 51 degrees outside. And we have to just kind of talk about what wonderful temperatures we have, because both Joe and Andy are sitting there in hot Texas. So we'll rub it in. I'll be back home. I better be careful we do it. Thank you so much, Alice, for dialing in and being a part of the program all the way through today, even though you're on vacation. Our listeners appreciate it. I appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back
after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. It is April 9th, and we're calling from the various places we're broadcasting. Well, I guess we broadcast from Blog Talk Radio. They're located in New York City. But we are actually all called in from all parts of the country. Thank you so much for being part of the broadcast each and every week. We're here to digest all that's going on and bring you valuable information. By the way, I didn't mention at the top of the program, I want to welcome Housing Matrix as one of our new partners of the program. Howard Voiles and his group have gone to great lengths to look at what to be a part of the program and develop a website. Folks, head on over to housingmatrix.com, go into the media section, which is one of the tabs right in the middle, I think it's Housing Media, and you'll see our new website related to this radio program. Thank you so much to Howard Voiles and his team professionals there at Housing Matrix. Folks, there is that's a great website. You need to surf around into it. Joe Farr introduced me to Howard, and I am so excited. In fact, Howard's going to be a guest on the program next week, and we're going to talk about a lot of the tools and resources that are out there and available to you. Another resource that is available to you that should, I kid you not, everybody should be listening to every aspect of the broadcast, but when it comes to running your business from a profitability standpoint, from knowing what's going on, management by the numbers, I'll tell you, Andy Schell, our very own profit doctor, is here to talk to us about FinReg, what's going on in relation to that. But Andy Schell, welcome again to the program. So pleased to have you be a part of it. Can I open up the discussion for us, Andy, as it relates to what we're talking about with all that's going on in the market at accounting? If our listeners love hearing from you, bring us some wisdom, profit doctor.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's great to be here again in sunny Austin, Texas, where it is warmer than it is in the Northern Peninsula of Michigan. But I'll tell you what, in January and February, Alice, I'll be glad to swap places with you. You may want to be down here.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, there are so many changes hitting our industry with FinReg, and is HVCC on? Is it off? What's Obama going to sign tomorrow that's going to affect the industry? All of these changes. And there was an article that just ran from one of our team in the National Mortgage Professional, and it was about analysis paralysis and how you need to look at the situation and then make decisions and move forward. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to stay focused on the things that are going on around us and focus on the basics of our business and keep moving forward. And one of the ways to do that is to think of mortgage banking as a loan factory. You know, when it's all said and done, what we want to do, our goal is to move applications through the process to become a loan that gets them. It gets purchased by the investor, and it gets purchased by the investor without the repurchase risk because everything was done right. We have as few people as possible touching the file. You know, the perfect structure would be every loan a processor touches, every loan an underwriter touches gets funded because you don't make any money on loans that don't fund, obviously. And so we want to do all this with few errors and as quickly as possible. So how do we do that? How do we run our business so it's basically process and risk perfect? Well, it's impossible to do it all the time, every time. But what you can do is you can focus on the basics. And some of the basics to do this are efficiency and effectiveness and economic. Look at the economics of every activity you're doing. So what that means is efficient means quickly producing a result. Don't waste any time. Effective means that the activity is correct each time and produces the correct result. And economic means that it costs less than the revenue it generates. So we have to balance efficient and effective because we want to do it quickly, but we also need to do it correctly the first time, every time. And so efficient, effective economic is important. You've got to focus on that in your business. You also need to have the right people doing the right things at the right time. Again, we don't have a business if we don't have people. We can't give everything to computers. We tried to do that with AUS several years ago, and look what happened. We need to have people looking at files. You've got to look at it. People don't want to make an application over the Internet. They want to talk to an originator. It's a scary transaction for people, so you've got to have people. But you need to have the right people doing the right things at the right time. And just by doing these things, efficient, effective, economic, right people doing the right things at the right time, just those two principles alone will really help to drive financial success. And by introducing what I would call organizational disciplines. Organizational disciplines means that you're thinking about the things in your business. You're thinking about the number of files a processor's processing. You think about your turn time and underwriting. You're watching your numbers. You're making certain all the pieces are flowing together quickly. With organizational disciplines, then that's going to drive profitability.
So, Andy, if a company is efficient and effective, how do they grow?
Well, that's a great question, Alice, and that's really the hard part. Because you can have it running smoothly and be just one person. One person doing everything can really run very smoothly because you're doing it all. And then if you have two, and then if you have 20, and then what if you have 200? How do you make this growth happen and preserve the same level of quality and profitability and control over a growing organization? Well, one of the things you need to do is it's not just all about volume. You don't focus on just adding more branches or adding new originators or just growing more for the sake of growth. It has to be profitable. And you have to have a focus on return on investment and profitability. It's not just revenue. It's the bottom line. It's not just making another 5 bips on a branch you add when it may cost you 10 bips to add the branch. You've got to consider all of the aspects of this coming together as a whole. And so you have to proactively manage all these things and don't just get stuck on one part, but keep moving forward and thinking about it as a whole. So some of the ways to think about it as a whole are to look at things that I all call vision, measure, optimize, grow. So vision, measure, optimize, grow. The acronym for it is VMOG. Doesn't sound very good. VMOG. Vision,
okay,
measure.
We'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah, vision, measure, optimize, grow. And the reason I'm hitting this point over and over is that if you'll do these four things in order, then your business is going to have a really solid shot at being profitable. And vision means you plan where you're going. You know, Dave and Alice, both of you are not in the office today, so you drove somewhere. And before you got in the car, you made a plan. You knew where you're going to go and maybe even where you're going to stay and the route you're going to take because you're just going on a vacation. So how much more important is it to plan the future of your livelihood of being able to make your house payment? You need to plan your business. You need to have a financial forecast. You need to be able to predict your profit. So that's part of visioning is where are you going to go? How are you going to get there? What's the numbers going to be? Measure. You need to measure your business. Are you making a profit? Is adding that branch that brings in 5 bips worth it? Well, it might be. It might not be. It depends on how much it's going to cost and what the net bottom line is going to be. You've got to know your profit per loan, profit per originator. You got to have the right system. So as you optimize your business, vision, measure, optimize, as you're optimizing your business, you're looking at the best process flow. You're looking at the right technology for your business. We all have to have systems. You have to have computers that store data and move data from one place to the other. But it's about efficiency. So systems and technology can generate efficiency. And the most expensive system may actually be the most efficient. And so just because a system's less expensive doesn't mean that all in it's a better decision, because it could be that the more expensive system actually generates a better ROI. So you can't look at just one piece over the other. You got to look at it as a total on what the bottom line effect is. So vision, measure, optimize, and then grow. Adding branches, get more capital, maybe acquire other companies, all the time watching the ROI. So it is really important to do these things in order. Vision, measure, optimize, grow, always looking at ROI. And as you do these things, then you'll grow profitably. So as I wrap up this session of the Profit Doctor, excuse me, I want to remind you of a movie that was really popular, I don't know, 10 years ago, and that was The Field of Dreams. I don't know if you remember the movie with Kevin Costner if you build it, they will come. He turns a cornfield into a baseball diamond. And in that movie, his ROI of mowing down that whole cornfield was because he was going to get a restored relationship with his father. Well, and it just so happens then that all these cars come to pay to see the baseball field that he built. So those cars replaced his lost revenue. Well, excuse me, it's allergy season in Texas. In Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. So he built the field, and you know the story. Can I tell you, though, in business, generally speaking, most of the time, Field of Dreams is a really bad idea. Do not build a big operations platform hoping you're going to get a bunch of branches. Do not go get 50 state licenses, think you're going to be in 50 states. You build the business as the business grows, justified by the revenue. You can get a little bit in front of it, but don't get way, way, way in front of it. Keep your revenue and expenses in line. Success in business is not random. If you follow these tools, then you can be successful in business. Vision, measure, optimize, grow. And I apologize for my voice, but Dave, back to you. That's the profit doctor.
That's good. I like the E3 and the R3. That's good. Good stuff. It helps me remember that stuff. And folks, it's just so important that we understand. Remember this. A failure to plan is a plan to fail. We've heard that over and over and over again, and that's really what we're talking about. And most of us, you folks, you kind of get it from my personality. I'm on the sales side of things. I was a successful loan officer. The mistakes I've made is this is why I'm so excited about the Profit Doctor segment, is because that is where I've struggled in my own business, in my own business ventures, is not having the full perspective on how to plan for things financially. Folks, this is a valuable segment. Andy, thank you so much for bringing it to us each and every week. We look forward to your future segments and being a part of the program here as we continue on. Folks, we're going to be right back after this quick break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. 77799 Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. We're coming to you from all points of the globe. I'm out here in Washington State. Alice is up in northern Michigan. Andy and Joe are there in the Austin, Texas area. Folks, we appreciate you dialing in. Out there, look at the switchboard. I see people dialed in from all points of the country. I'm looking at area code 248-512-713-847-719-385. Folks, I appreciate so much you listening. Even more, we appreciate your feedback. And now we have a website that you can go to, provide us your feedback, get yourself registered. There's going to be some real benefits that come for those that register. Head over to housingmatrix.com, and you will see the provision under the housing media of all the information about our radio program and how you can register for it. We appreciate the new partnership we have with Housing Matrix and Howard Voiles and his outstanding team. Next week, we're going to have Howard on the program talking about online resources that are so critical at a time where the online marketing, online communication is so critical. And identifies you as being someone being proactive and being progressive in this business environment. It's a great lot of tools there for you. Folks, I want to talk about a little tour we took yesterday because it really opens up this next segment. We're talking about the effects of FinReg, financial regulation that is upon us, and we're all dealing with it. I mean, dealing with it in a big way. And here's my metaphor. That what I took a tour of yesterday. We drove up. We're up here in White Pass, Washington State, in the beautiful Cascade Mountain Range, and we drove up to St. Helens, where the eruption took place on May 18th, 1980. I was living in Seattle at the time in the Pacific Northwest. I witnessed that. I watched that. We hung. We just were glued to the TV at the scenes of amazing destruction and talk about altered landscape. And that's really where I'm going now. Well, we drove up to the Windy Ridge. It's called the Windy Ridge Observation. And I know why it's called Windy Ridge. It was blowing like crazy and cold. My goodness, my Texas blood tried to start thickening up yesterday. But we sat and got an amazing view of a mountain that had lost, I believe it was 12 or 1,800 feet of the top of the mountain, blew off and changed the landscape. There was a lake down below called Spirit Lake. It was one of the most peaceful, picturesque, beautiful places. And it represents so much of what our industry has been. Picturesque, beautiful. A lot of us have for 30 years. I've been in this industry for 37 years, folks. And it was just, this industry has been picturesque for me. I've enjoyed it. There's been certainly some challenges along the way. But FinReg seems and represents a little bit of a Mount St. Helens kind of explosion. It has altered the landscape, folks, and we've got to deal with it. One of the things we go, our goal of this radio program each and every week is to help you digest all that's going on out there and help you deal with it in a way of how does this change your business? And today we're going to have continue our discussion from last week about how FinReg, financial regulation, is altering or should alter, or how you should look at that in relation to your business strategy. I asked each of our regular guests, Joe and Alice and Andy, to submit five or some number of things that they thought are important. And we're going to start off with Joe's talking points. Joe, if you could launch off into your feedback about this, what has changed the landscape. But first of all, I'd love to get everyone's feedback. Is it not changed the landscape? Alice, Joe, and Andy, give me your feedback. Let's run around the horn real quickly. Am I mistaken in this?
Well, Joe, or Dave, since you said my name first, I'll jump in.
Yeah,
Think it's like an eruption. I think that's a good analogy. Joe?
Well, it's kind of brewing because it hadn't erupted yet, right? I mean, most of what's on right now. is we're just starting to feel it smolder and maybe starting to build up some pressure.
There you go.
I think that's a good way to put it. That's a great way to put it.
I don't think, you know, when we saw the headlines that says Countrywide files bankruptcy and WaMu's merged and name the list. When we saw that happen a couple of years ago, we knew things were changing, and they have changed and will always be changed now.
You know what? It's so interesting because when I lived here almost a year in advance, we were anticipating the eruption of Mount St. Helens. And there was one whole side of the hill that was growing and growing and growing. And for your point, Joe, it was pressure, and then there was this eruption. Now, we don't know exactly how this is going to play out, so it's a metaphor, but let's get into your talking points. You really wrote out some good points for every one of our listeners to pay attention to. Let's kick it off, Joe.
All right, well, I'll start in through these, and I'd sure invite in everyone's discussion or thoughts about them because, it's certainly not all the strategies to deal with this, but let's just talk about the very essence of what's happening and why the changes are here. And my first thought is that we should embrace these changes, the essence of these changes, and I consider the essence to be that we should do what is right for the customer. You know, I think a lot of people have set their mission statements, et cetera, to do what's right for the customer. But as an industry, I think in looking back, it's clear that we could do a better job. And I just think that this ought to begin now because you don't know all the changes yet. And a lot of what I'm thinking, what are the strategies we can do now? Because we don't know what's going to happen with how the regulators are going to respond to their mission to write rules. But build that function the essence into your functions and make sure there are no abuses. Consider that this is an improvement to the mortgage lending industry and not just an overreaching regulatory burden. And so with that, I'd throw it open to you guys. Do you agree with that?
go ahead and jump in here, Joe, because I totally agree with you. We've talked about that even as RESPA was getting implemented, that you have to embrace this. Don't sit around and commiserate and complain and say, why did this happen to us? Because, you know, in Dave's analogy, we as an industry created the smoldering problem with the subprime lending that went on. So this is the next explosion after the first explosion, I guess. So when we tried to tell people, focus on making things better for the customer, focus on the consumer, it was hard to get people out of that mode. So I would be right there with you saying, look, this is it. You don't get to undo this. There is a way to operate by taking care of the customer and still running a profitable business.
Yeah, well, if you like it or not, these are the rules now. So, but if you think about it from the perspective that it is better for the consumer to not have these big market rate increases, you know, a 5% borrower, a 5% note rate gets a 6% rate because they can, just because the borrower is uninformed. So, you know, those days are gone, and we just might as well accept it.
So
couldn't agree with you more. And jumping in here on the thoughts, I think that's one of the things, folks, that we hope to do with this radio program is bring you information and start striking you and thinking, you know what, there is a lot of frustration out there, Joe, in amongst our listeners and many people. And I know you're hearing it, I'm hearing it, Andy, Alice, we're all out there. And there's this, it's almost like dealing with anger or grief. I just lost my father, so I'm learning the stages of grief. And you know, it's one step at a time. Yeah, you just get angry about it, but at some point in time, we got to deal with it.
A story I'll relay is I heard one guy say, and I share this same thought, how can the government tell us how to pay our people? How can they tell us so much about what we have to do in running our business? Yeah, I kind of resent that, but at the same time, you got to realize you're selling 95% of all the loans that are made to these same guys, to the government.
Yep.
So
great point.
You know, there are, as I mentioned earlier, the details of this are yet to be determined. So there's not a lot of programming you can do right now. But from a systems perspective, it's my opinion that you need to make sure that your systems are such that when the time is here and when the rules are written and when they have to be built into the systems and implemented, that you are dealing with providers that can do that for you, that will have the resources, both the financial and the human resources, to make your systems work right for you. And so I caution those of you who have in-house systems, or do you have the resources to make sure that your systems work after all these changes need to be implemented? If you have in-house resources and the answer to that question is no, then maybe you need to be using this time to get with somebody that does have those resources.
You know, and I think we need to define systems. I think a lot of people think of systems as computer systems. I mean, there's the carbon-based systems, which are the human-based systems, and the silicone-based systems are computers. So, I mean, Andy, Shell, we get into this discussion a lot amongst our firm about the various systems. Could you add some color to that?
Well, sure. I mean, you've got to have systems that work. When I was with Bank of America back in the 90s, we used to talk about systems that work. And so it's not just having a really cool computer system, and it's not having the most expensive, and it's not having the cheapest. It's about having systems that add value to the business, that mitigate risk, deliver information effectively and efficiently through the system. And to do that, you've got to be able to adapt to the changes in the environment. So I agree with Joe's point here that if you've got an Access database or an Excel system that you've been using to do some of the core processing or core operational activity of mortgage banking, you're going to potentially be in trouble because there's going to be HMDA data and origination data that has to be moved between systems, and you need for the LOS to integrate with the operations system that needs to integrate with the accounting system, and that can be challenging. It can be a lot of work and a lot of people to make the systems talk to each other, but fundamentally, they've got to work together to generate the efficiency you need for your business so you can make the most possible in your business. You want to, it's got to all be about adding value to the bottom line of your company with the processes and systems you put in place.
Well, Andy, and I'm going to dovetail off of that with a point that you made previously. As people look at what are the solutions, I see so many people just trying to find a plug-and-play solution to what they have now, thinking, well, if I could only add this little piece, then it'll be fixed, instead of taking a holistic approach to all the compliance. We're watching customers who haven't even really finished completely adapting to the extra cost and extra operational issues associated with RESPA. So now is the time, if you feel you haven't gotten that completely nailed down, take a look at financial regulatory reform at the same time and look at the whole piece and say, is the system I'm on going to work for all of this? Because I'll bet you could not only increase your efficiencies with your current operation, get that up to speed where you need to now, but then also be well prepared ahead of time. But they don't want to necessarily drop the money for a whole new system. But some of them just need to say that's actually going to be more profitable.
Yeah, and like we talked last week, these systems, there's no such thing as plug and play. You don't flick the switch and it works perfectly. There's always a conversion, and conversions are always disruptive and unpleasant. But you've got to, it's like having a baby. You've got to get past the process to get to the having a little baby that's cooing and a one-year-old that's having a birthday party. And then think about it as a five-year transition. So don't just change systems every 6 months. Create an RFP. What do you need? Talk to the vendors that provide that service. Get them to help you identify how their systems meet your needs, and then make a decision that's going to be around for 5 years. You know, we've worked a lot with some folks who have some amazing systems, DataTrack being one of them, and talk to these people and get them to help you make the complete decision.
It's a great point, Andy. And also I want to say acknowledge thank you to our guest that we had on from Loan Sifter last week. It was just valuable information. Joe, we got a lot to go. Let's move through the list here. Got so much to talk
okay.
about, and I'm looking at the clock here. It looks like we got the clock is moving quickly. So next point.
All right. So right in, along those lines, what you can be doing now in anticipation of the regulatory changes that are coming and the process changes that are coming is to build capital. And I say that is important now because there are a number of things that can come from building your capital. One is there are going to be a lot of people who just throw their arms up and say, I cannot do this. I'm not going to go through the efforts to build changing systems and to building all the things to be sure you can do what you need to do after reform. And they're going to say, let me join up with somebody that is doing that, that can do that. And so I think building capital will give you those great opportunities. I think building capital will help you to ensure that you can get through those inefficient times that go along with process changes, system changes, et cetera. So building capital now will really benefit you as we near and get into the implementation time of these changes.
Well, and the building capital plays to all the companies. You know, we talk about moving from broker to lender, but it's also moving up to my DE authority for FHA. So you've got that transition that a lot of companies are trying to get through right now as well, operationally, as well as trying to prepare for the final FinReg.
Yeah, Joe mentioned a point here about counterparty. I just want to make the point that Joe made in his write-up is that you are a counterparty. If your business is signing a correspondent agreement with Wells Fargo, Wells Fargo is a counterparty, and you're the counterparty. You're each parties to the agreement. So a counterparty means whoever are the two companies that signed the agreement, and counterparty risk is here to stay, as Joe commented. Counterparty risk means Wells Fargo is going to look very carefully at who they have signing the lining at the bottom of the contract with them. And the way you overcome that, whether if it's Wells or B of A or warehouse lane lenders or whomever, one of the ways you overcome that is capital and operational efficiencies and good financial reporting and profit.
Well,
that kind of touches on the next point.
Yeah.
You know, the next point is QC and your process. And you know, the FHA has decided to make the big lenders the auditors of the guys that they used to audit, right? The FHA guys. Well, they're going to do the same thing as it relates to quality. And so as you prepare today for the environment when this is all implemented, is expect that new regulator, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau regulator, is going to look to the big bank customers that they deal very directly with to be the auditor of your process and your QC. So I suggest that you make sure your QC function is well documented. Make sure it's useful, too. I mean, it's not just something you do. It's got to be something you learn from and you implement changes because of. And I suggest this because I think that the correspondents you sell loans to or the wholesalers you sell loans to are going to be required to know that they know this about your operations.
Yeah, you know, I think more of them are going to be doing branch site audits.
That's a good point, Alice. And here's why, folks. I mean, and this is a lot of people are saying, this just speaks to some of the frustration that's out there. Man, it feels like everywhere I turn, I got someone else new coming through and want to look at my operation. Because the big banks, folks, are the ones that ultimately have the deepest pockets and are the ones that are most exposed when it comes to class action lawsuits. In the last few years, I've done a fair amount of legal expert witness work. Our consulting firm is getting more and more into expert witness work. We're doing a lot of it right now. And it's, you know, these attorneys that are suing the investors are not looking for the little guy. They know they don't have the money. They know that they maybe only have, you know, $1.5 million to maybe $15 million. The deep pockets are where these billion-dollar institutions are. So, folks, it's not like these guys are just trying to be obnoxious and go in here. Their exposure with FINRA goes up. At least that's how I'm seeing it, Alice. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. As you're talking about the risk and having to participate and now set aside the capital reserves, they're going to want to make sure that if they're going to have to really have that amount of investment into these transactions, they really know the quality. It's not going to just be, you know, before third-party relationships were a lot of just competition, who's doing what. And they're all kind of seeing who's going to be doing what level of monitoring now with the new regulations. So that'll all still be to play out. But there's going to be more. Just prepare yourself that you need, like Joe's saying, to have everything documented and put as much as I like to use the word QA, quality assurance, as much as you can put in the front of the process before you close the loan, save you some of the grief afterwards.
Good point. Good point. Joe, what else do we have on the list there?
Well, to Andy Schell's points about accounting and knowing your process, we're going to be going through a change in compensation. The way it's been paid in the past is going to change to a large extent. But in order to change it, you need to know if what you're changing to is a good for your company as well as the LO. Is it too rich for the LO and too thin for you? You don't know that unless you really know your numbers. And you can begin now to really understand how much you make per loan and how much can you afford to pay if you can get into and study those numbers.
I want to bring out one point because you brought out something in our pre-show program is about having a guide. We're up here in the mountains. You have a lot of guide services, fly fishing guide services, walk through the mountains guide service, walk up to the top of a mountain. This is a mountain to climb, Andy, and talk about that guide service, how critical it is.
Well, you know, if you think about what's happening in the industry, for people that are 30-somethings owning their business, they've never seen this before. For us that are 50-somethings or even 60s, you know, no offense, Dave, there are you're not 60 yet. I'm just messing with you.
August, 2 days away.
but, you know, all of us on this, everybody speaking on this call remembers the 80s. We went through the 80s, and in Texas in the 80s, in the South in the 80s, we had some very similar activities. We had 90% of the savings loans in Texas failed. And we had some very significant real estate issues. We had origination issues. We had interest rate issues. And so we've seen something similar. It's worse now, but we've seen it before. And it's really, really important to have somebody that can help read the tea leaves and understand a vision of where you're going to go, how you're going to get there, and how you're going to make money doing it. And for most people, they need a coach. I'd call them a growth coach. Maybe a growth guru is a better word. So I'd encourage folks to get a growth guru and, you know, make sure they've got the been there, done that scars and the experience. What's the saying, Dave? The been there, done that T-shirt and the scars to prove it. So,
yeah.
Well, and I think you want to make sure it's someone who's going to be honest with you about what you think your vision is, because I've sat with customers recently and their vision is They want certain things to stay the same, and they don't realize how many things have to change, including, for instance, down to how they allow their loan officers to operate on a daily basis. A loan officer being able to select raw pricing, you know, how some of the most fundamental things people need to be shaken up about right now and re-look at how they do business.
Well, you know, both Joe and
sorry.
Well, I was going to say, both Joe and I are CPAs. Alice is a CMB, and Dave, your new designation also now is going to be GGC for Great Growth Coach.
You know, it is so important, folks, that you get the knowledge, wisdom. You know what? The friends that I value the most, the relationships are the ones that I value the most over history, have been the ones that bring me the things, not necessarily what I want to hear, but what I need to hear. That's what this radio program is about, folks. We're wanting to bring you things that you need to hear. It may not be exactly what you want to hear. We try to cover everything as much as we can on this program, but there's things that just can't get covered and when we're doing this and covering some of the hot topics. And so that's why we have a partner, Rob Katz at Del Mar DataTrack, that help us digest these issues. Rob, what's the news that's out there that we may not have discussed?
Hi, David. I've got just a couple of hot items I want to share with your listeners today, so I'll jump right to it. The MBA released their Q1 Mortgage Bankers Performance Report, and the folks at ReverseMortgageDaily.com did a great job of summarizing the findings. Unfortunately, the news isn't good. The study found that the average profit per loan dropped to only $606 during the first quarter of 2010. That's $280 less per loan from the prior quarter. The decrease is tied to a drop in volume while operating expenses stayed the same. Search for the article called Mortgage Banking Profits Dropped During First Quarter at ReverseMortgageDaily.com. Then last week, I found an article in the Washington Post that explains the changes to FHA loans in a way that a non-mortgage person can understand. Now, hopefully this is nothing new to our listeners or their staff, but if you wanted to point a borrower to this article to help them get educated, that might not be a bad idea. It covers changes to seller concessions, credit scores, underwriting policies, and short refinancing. You can find it on the WashingtonPost.com website. Just search for FHA loan changes. While there, you may also want to see their story on the fee increases coming down the pipe to borrowers on FHA loans. And finally, David, I wanted to point out that Fannie Mae just launched the new consumer education website at KnowYourOptions.com. There's a press release about it on the Fannie Mae website. I would recommend that our listeners direct their LOs to the site so they can be prepared to talk to borrowers who have been there and may have questions. By the way, I read that Fannie Mae paid $50,000 for that domain name, our tax money at work. Well, those are the stories that caught my attention this past week. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
Rob, thank you so much for bringing it to us. We're proud to have DMD as a proud sponsor of the radio program, as we do PMI. And I just realized in me not having my normal notes up here, we weren't able to put in a positive word about or to run the normal PMI spot. I apologize for that. But I want to tell you, folks, PMI is an insurance company that you should be considering as you look at your mortgage insurance needs. They've got programs, and most importantly, I'll tell you, I'm getting a chance to get to know the PMI staff around the country. These guys care about your business. I use Ralph Armento. It's just one of the examples who has championed getting the sponsorship for this radio program because he has a concern about what your needs are. You, the listener, that are in the mortgage business, he cares about what your needs are. Folks, we appreciate so much PMI as a sponsor, and folks like Ralph Armento who are running around the country helping mortgage bankers. Folks, go get in touch with your local PMI rep. If you don't know who they are, go to their website, and we'll help you through it. My apologies to the PMI folks for not running their spot this week, but I want to put in a positive word for them. They're a great group of folks. I encourage you to get to know them. Folks, each week, we thank you for staying tuned to this program, tuning in and listening to it. As I look at the panel, we got folks calling in from all over the country. Thank you so much. Tell your associates about it. Get the word out at your next trade association about this program because we're here to help you digest all that's going on in this industry. Have a great week, folks. This is Dave Licken, along with Joe Farr, Alice Alvey, and everyone else up here. And we're here to help you. And have a great week. Thank you.
This has been Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
on the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.